You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids!
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's dance-off, bro! Me and you!
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. It's a lovely Friday night here at Trent Radio. Hey, Kids Comics. Marty here. Who else is here?
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle, and I am basically sitting here pondering what they were thinking about putting Richard Pryor in the Superman 3 movie.
There you go.
And I'm Chris Gilpin.
Oh, my goodness!
I know. Yay! Isn't that great? We've really missed Chris, and I'm so happy to have Chris back. It's almost like there's been an element of the show that has been missing for a month now, and that element is Chris. So I feel complete again today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, comic books. What's up? What's been going on? Anybody have fun? Should I just like plow into my Amazon phone?
Yeah. Why don't you just do that? I didn't read very many comics this week.
I didn't go to CBA this
week. Neither did I. But I've read some comics in the last 2 weeks, so I do have things to talk about, which there is great. Go. But I'm just...
Well, why don't we finish the Superman 3 while we were talking about that?
Yeah.
Just briefly.
Okay.
So I was watching on a Facebook post that they were talking about what is the worst superhero movie ever. And people were like saying Daredevil and like the Ben Affleck Daredevil and Green Lantern. And I'm like, boys, you can go way back and find worse. And you picked Superman 3?
No, we're having two different conversations.
We're totally two different conversations. Wow, you really weren't listening in the kitchen, weren't you?
No. We were talking about Vaughn.
We were talking about Robert Vaughn. Robert Vaughn, yes. Actor Robert Vaughn died. And Robert Vaughn was one of those actors who was sort of like the second groomsman. You know what I mean? He was never really a star, but he was surefire, right? He was solid. He showed up, but he was, you know, about as exciting as cardboard.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he wasn't, his biggest role was The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and he was supposed to be the star of that series, and David McCallum was supposed to be his co-star, but then he was eclipsed in popularity by David McCallum. He was in The Magnificent Seven, but was probably the only actor from that film who never went on to become a major Hollywood star.
Yeah.
And Chris was saying his fondest memory of him is...
Superman 3. It's the only thing I could think of until you mentioned the A-Team. But
the A-Team, Delta Force, Bullet. I mean, he was the thing. He was in all these movies, but nobody remembers him being in any of these movies because he was Robert Vaughn. He was just kind of there. But
would you consider him like one of the more successful character actors?
Oh, certainly. I mean, he definitely...
people do know his name, sort of.
Mm-hmm. He definitely had a character. He was supposed to be sort of... He was kind of like James Bond's... you know, not so successful cousin. You know what I mean? Like he was charming and suave and debonair and good looking and had an authority about him. But it's hard, I really like Robert Vaughn, but yeah, he was just kind of there. But Robert Vaughn also appeared in comics per se because the Man from U.N.C.L.E. comic, of course, was a big success. Gold Key did a very long-running Man from U.N.C.L.E. series. And just recently, Robert Vaughn was characterized in the Batman 66 Meets Man from U.N.C.L.E. comic.
There you go.
And Robert Vaughn's, they drew Robert Vaughn's version of Napoleon Solo.
Now, am I on drugs or do I recall a Superman 3 like comic book adaptation?
Probably. Maybe.
I seem to recall something about that, and they actually drew Richard Pryor and everybody.
Oh, God, that was an awful, terrible movie, though.
Well, the cover, the movie poster was also kind of animated, right? With Superman carrying Richard Pryor or something like that, if I remember.
Yeah, I used to have the movie poster hanging in my bedroom as a kid.
Yeah.
I got it from Burger King.
Didn't know any better, eh?
Well, they were giving it free at Burger King. Yeah, and it hung in my bedroom.
Yeah.
But,
So, since I kind of used my little, what I call psychotic premonition, and kind of forwarded the discussion to what is the worst superhero movie if it's not Superman 3?
For me, I'd go possibly Batman and Robin.
No.
With what's his face? Clooney. Oh, that wasn't a movie. That didn't have a script. That just had a series of puns that was loosely put together.
I do have to say that movie was not... It didn't bomb because of Clooney's performance.
No, it wasn't because of Clooney. It was a terrible script.
It was a terrible script.
That's what hurt it.
It's almost like they tried to do Dayglow, Glow in the Dark, Batman 66.
Schumacher was trying to do 66, is basically. So I would go with that one. I have a special hatred for Man of Steel.
Superman 4?
Oh, God.
Come on now.
Now, Superman 4, I have a special story. Superman 4 has a special. I have a special story about Superman 4.
What, drunk Superman?
No, that was in Superman 3.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Superman 3 was drunk Superman. He gets...
Where he's launching the peanuts?
That's in Superman 3.
Oh.
Yeah, Superman 4 is where he fights the nuclear guy, right?
Didn't he go, like, dark and, like, have the dark costume sitting there?
No, that's in Superman 3. That's when Richard Pryor gives him the red kryptonite, and he gets all... Yeah.
Bad movies just... Meld together.
But when I was a kid, I saw Superman 4 in theaters, and I've never seen it again. I even own it, and I've never seen it since I saw it in theaters as a kid. And when you were a kid, you went to the movies, and you went and you saw Indiana Jones, and you went and you saw Star Wars, and you saw Ghostbusters. And every movie you went to, it was cool to go to the movies. You never knew. Yeah. It was like, we're going to the movies, and it's going to be great. It didn't matter what you saw, if it was Goonies, or if it was like Monster Squad, or it didn't matter what it was. It was going to be great. And Superman 4 was the first time as a child where I went to a movie and I walked out and I said, what the hell was that? Yeah. It was the first time where I learned that movies can be freaking terrible and you don't need to like every movie you go see. Yeah. And look what it turned me into today. Right?
Yeah, it can disappoint. The movie can enjoy, like, can excite, but can also disappoint.
And that was the first time I can honestly remember leaving a movie theater in my life and going, oh my God, I hated every minute of that.
How about you, Chris? What's your most hated superhero movie?
I was trying to think of one. Come back to me, you go.
Like plexiglass shield Captain America from the 70s with the motorcycle? Well,
that's kind of awesome.
Fantastic Four movie that... did or did not exist, depending on who
you're talking. Oh, the Corman one? I like that one.
Oh, it definitely exists.
Yeah.
There was one that was made but never released. Or
something. Yeah,
that's
Corman.
Roger Corman.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun.
There's a documentary that I've purchased back in 2014 that is now being released, but I got a review screener of it. It's called Doomed, and it talks all about that.
I just watched it about 2 weeks ago, and it's a fantastic documentary.
Well,
excuse the pun.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I would like to nominate the lovely disc that I have in my hands.
I can't wait to rewatch this.
This is the 1978 TV version of Doctor Strange. It was a TV movie. Jessica Walter, right? Famous for...
The Jessica Walter Show.
Not what I was going to say, but I was going to say...
there is no such thing as a Jessica Walter
show. She does the voice of the matronly boss in Archer.
Oh, yes.
And she was in Arrested Development.
Yep.
She was the mom in Arrested Development.
Yep.
And Peter Hooten.
Peter Hooten.
Who is Peter Hooten?
Well, he played Doctor Strange.
Apparently, he played Doctor Strange in 1978.
And wait till you see, he has like the biggest afro. He has an afro. I mean, we're not talking Jackson afro, but he's like a white man with an afro, like a white fro.
So this is gonna be 93 minutes of my life that I'm either going to regret exponentially.
If we can put it together, I would love to come and watch that with you you watch it.
Well, the other thing,
like I've seen it. I used to have a bootleg, but
we chatted a little bit about it in the kitchen there. But I remember watching. And for years, I thought it was Doctor Strange, but it wasn't. Full Moon came out with one with Jeffrey Combs called Dr. Mordrud.
And
he had the cape. He had the inner sanctum. This was Doctor Strange knockoff to the utmost. And it was okay for its time.
Yeah.
Now, I know you haven't seen Doctor Strange yet.
I have not seen the new Doctor Strange
movie
yet.
Have you seen it yet?
No.
Okay, I mean, we're going... Wednesday.
Depends.
Probably.
I don't know. You're working now.
Well, but I'll be off in time to make it.
Well, there you go. Maybe. That's the stunned silence of me trying to wrap my head around Sam going, hey, I know you worked all week long. Let's go see a movie at 10:15 tonight, even though you got to get up early in the morning and rake leaves because your father-in-law is coming with the truck.
Well, we don't have to go tonight.
Yeah, it's not going to be tonight.
I know it's not going to be tonight, but I thought that it was going to be Wednesday. Just because I work on Wednesday doesn't mean I can't still go.
We'll do it Wednesday.
We're going
Wednesday.
All right, Wednesday.
Chris has an idea here.
What about the 1997 Justice League movie?
See, that's kind of a tough one because that was like pilot.
It was like a pilot.
Did they actually release it?
I don't think they...
I've seen pieces of it. Isn't the guy from MASH, the TV show?
Yeah,
Martian Manhunter?
Yes, he is.
Oh,
yeah.
That was bad.
One I have a soft spot for, like it's bad, but it's awesomely bad, is Legends of the Superheroes with Adam West and Burt Ward. And it had Huntress and Black Canary and Hawkman, Captain Marvel.
That's that roast, right?
Yeah. It's a two-part thing. I have a bootleg of that. And one thing I'm proud of to say is that... character actor William Shallert, who died earlier this year, he plays a character called Retired Man, like an elderly superhero.
I remember that.
And he had not seen that series.
Sorry.
I did an interview with him, and he had not actually seen it since it was made.
Yeah.
And a good friend of mine was his agent, so I actually sent it to him. And he saw it for the first time since the 70s, and... when I asked, you know, what did he think? She said that he wishes he hadn't seen it again. So he also played Fred Andrews in the failed Archie pilot from 1963, which I also sent him a copy of. He had never seen before.
Yeah.
Which is really, actually, if anyone gets a chance to see the 1963 pilot of Archie, it's amazing. It's really good. Seriously, possibly better than what Riverdale will be. But... anyway,
I am so not looking forward to that.
All right, so
yeah, I think that 97 was like they tried to do a TV show.
Have you guys ever seen the pilot for Wonder Woman with Kathy Lee Crosby?
Yeah.
I've never seen that. What's that like?
There was another Wonder Woman pilot. The one with Kathy Lee Crosby is exactly what you would expect from the 70s Bionic Woman type era. Totally different costume, not out of the comic books whatsoever. Yeah, she's like a super spy, and it's almost like it's an episode of Bionic Woman. That's its kind of spirit. But there was also a pilot for a Wonder Woman that they were thinking of making by William Dozer, who did Batman 66.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Marty, because I actually have an article that was published in Film Facts magazine maybe about 5-6 years ago, which is a profile on that film where I actually researched the pilot. And wrote about all the little parts and how it all came together. It was called Who's Afraid of Diana Prince? And Wonder Woman was to be played by the woman who played Diana Prince, and the woman who played Wonder Woman would have been two different roles. So the woman who played the woman who played Diana Prince was really mousy and nerdy, why Wonder Woman would have been sexy. And you know who was going to play Wonder Woman was Linda Harrison, who played Nova in Planet of the Apes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She was going to be playing Wonder Woman in that. And it just, it's dreadful if you ever get a chance to watch
it. I did see a few minutes of it. It looked pretty bad.
Yeah. But yeah, if you, I have an article. I don't remember what issue of Film Facts magazine, but I know I have three copies if you guys ever want to read it.
There you go.
It was one of my, I think it was my third published article.
So really, when we look back at our childhood kids' comic movies, and this is one of the reasons, Sam, that I watch every comic book movie. I don't care. Because I went through such a drought as a kid as far as good movies. But when all these kids are whining about, you know, oh, Green Lantern and Daredevil, we can whip out, you know, some real humdingers like the Incredible Hulk TV movie with the Thor.
Yeah.
Right? Where he was dressed in black fur. And the Daredevil that was in the other Incredible Hulk TV
movie. With
the ninja costume. That was, wasn't that the guy who ended up, he became... Street Hawk. What the heck is his name?
Todd Bridges.
The guy who played the... Oh, Jesus. I don't want to play this game with you because you always come up with the stupidest stuff. Anyways, he ended up being... he's got some kind of name like Lance Reed.
Desi Arnaz Jr.
Or Dwight Johnson.
Patrick Duffy.
No. I'm not even going to talk to you anymore because you just...
Patrick Duffy.
You just...
Rex Smith.
That's it.
There Rex you go. Smith. That's a great name.
Exactly.
What
it's
a
like
great
it's like
name.
A soap opera slash porn star.
Dr. Rex Smith.
Street Hawk.
Street Hawk. Yeah, he had like
what
a
was
he had like
Hawk?
A,
I don't even know
a,
what that
it was
is.
A Knight Rider on a motorcycle.
Oh Jesus.
It was awesome.
No, that's not awesome.
It was better than Animal.
You mean no, Manimal? Manimal? Manimal's awesome. Have you seen Manimal lately?
Yes.
I downloaded Manimal a few years ago and I rewatched it. It was great. Why have they not remade Manimal?
Because they don't need to.
No.
The original stands up.
What a...
And Desi Arnaz Jr. in Automan?
Automan. He was an Automan.
That's the car that went around the corners. Like
started doing computer graphics.
Yeah. But wasn't... Desi Arnaz was the sidekick, wasn't he?
He was the sidekick.
He was the sidekick.
Well,
that,
it depends because some people say that the Automan himself was the sidekick. And it was more about... You know, Desi, but holy moly, was that bad.
I came across an image the other day, recently on Facebook, and I own the series, so I should dig it out and find this, but it was a hawk-looking guy, and apparently it was from, he was from Buck Rogers. Do you remember Hawk Guy?
The second season of Buck Rogers had Hawk.
Yeah. Hawk, yeah.
Black leather costume, white fur.
Yeah. I saw a picture of him on Facebook, and it blew my mind, and I own the complete series on DVD, but you know, when I bought it, I started watching it, but I never got to season two.
Yeah. They call it the jump the shark moment, too, because in season two, they take it off the Earth. They're now on a cruiser. It's almost like Voyager. Mm-hmm. They're on a cruiser and they're traveling through the universe, and Hawk is one of the members of the crew, and Wilma started wearing this funky hat and
funky hats, eh?
Yeah.
There was one episode that as a child it just freaked me out I saw it. It had that invisible vampire guy that only Wilma could see.
Oh yeah.
And every time she looked he was just staring right at her. And I just got the shivers every time I saw him.
It was like our version of Stone Angels.
Ooh.
Yeah,
wow,
like, it was crazy.
Now I'm gonna watch that.
Wilma, she was my memory.
Erin Gray.
Have I ever told you guys my Erin Gray story?
No.
All right. I need.
Does it involve spandex or lycra?
Let me tell you the story.
If and it doesn't is, involve it, spandex it, it, and lycra. Comic, don't ruin this. The
it,
fantasy.
It, it's
for me.
Comic related. This is a true story. So I was at Fan Expo a number of years ago, and who's that? The cute redhead from. The Guild.
The one that was in Dr.
Felicity,
Horrible?
Felicia Day.
So Felicia Day was there, and I had got... Somehow I was doing press, and somehow I snuck by all the security. I just walked in like I was supposed to be there, and everybody let me in, and I'm in there hours early. And Felicia Day was sitting there, and she was setting up everything. So I went up to talk to her, and I said, hey... And I wanted to do an interview with Felicia Day, so I said, hey, do you have like a manager or some kind of management or something like that? I'd like to talk to them because I learned when it came to interviewing celebrities to talk to their agents and their managers. Don't go right up to the celebrity and say, I want to talk to you. You got to go with their agents. So she points to this really amazing, beautiful, stunning older woman who was there setting up her stuff. She says, oh, she's right over there. So I walk up and I start chatting with this beautiful woman. I just remember she was stunning, big blue eyes and just so beautiful. And I'm like, oh, hi, I'm Sam Tweedle, and I write for PopCultureAddict.com, and blah, blah, blah. I'd love to do an interview with Felicia Day. Not this weekend, necessarily, but maybe over the phone later on. She says, oh, that sounds great. Here's my card. Give me a call. Don't call me next weekend because I'm bringing my daughter to university, but 2 weeks later, we'll figure something out. And she sends me this card. It says Erin Gray Productions. I'm like, oh, Erin Gray. There used to be an actress named Erin Gray. I wonder whatever happened to her. And I look up, and the woman looks at me, and I look at her, and I'm like, ha, and she goes, ha, ha, and I walk away. Well, later on, I'm running to this guy, Peter Romo, who's a friend of mine, and Peter Romo was like, oh, my God, Sam, you wouldn't believe who I was talking to. I'm like, who? And I'm like, I was talking to Erin Gray. I'm like, oh, I met Erin Gray, too. Yeah, she's managing Felicia Day. You know, there used to be an actress named Erin Gray. I wonder whatever happened to her. And he's like, dude, that was Erin Gray. I'm like, I know, no, that's like...
That was the
Erin Gray. Yeah. Well, I would just like to say Erin Gray returned none of my calls, returned none of my emails. Yep. No, I've seen her at conventions since doing the management thing, and I just kind of stay away from her. But if you do go to a convention, a lot of the time, if you see this beautiful, stunning brunette, she's still gorgeous. But she's
more like sitting beside like celebrities.
She doesn't even sit beside the celebrities. She kind of wanders in the background. But like I know some of the people she manages as Bruce Campbell, Stan Lee. She's her, She does
so odds
him.
Odds are we've seen her then.
Odds are. Last time I saw her was when we were all at the show together and I met Allison Mack. I know she does like a lot of the Smallville kids. And that's what she does now. Is she's a she's sort of celebrity manager for this thing. But to me, I didn't think it would be the Erin Gray, because to me, if to meet the Erin Gray, she would be sitting there signing autographs.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's the way I would have pictured her. Still beautiful, but that foot and mouth moment—one of the worst of my professional career.
Well, she did that Silver Snails, right?
Silver Spoon. Silver Spoon. Silver snail is a comp.
Silver Spoon.
Silver Spoons forever.
And then after that, it was like what? The Murder She Wrote episode.
I don't know.
I don't think she did much after.
Oh,
that.
God, she's beautiful though, wasn't she? She's something else.
There you go.
She was also Erin Gray. Another little bit is, you guys have all seen the video to Leonard Nimoy doing the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins on the beach with the go-go dancers.
Yep,
she's one of the dancers in that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So Erin
Gray.
As you turned around, she wrote down Sam Tweedle.
Fail. No.
Do not respond.
Do not respond. Yeah.
Oh boy.
There you go.
That's my Erin Gray story.
So what else?
I'm going to watch Buck Rogers now.
I think I have it. I might as well.
The other one that sticks out in my mind is when they were on this planet and they had to get through this maze, and that little guy was mocking them and laughing at them as they tried to do these little... I can't even remember. It was this little guy kept rhyming, and he was always off in the distance.
Muhammad Ali.
No.
Muffy
little.
The Mouse.
No, stop it.
Well, they rhyme.
It's Stan. No, no, he rhymed.
That wasn't Star Trek? With the...
No, I'm pretty sure it was...
The Demon.
Pretty sure
Stop.
It was
Etrigan.
I am turning off his mic. Yeah. Here it goes.
I'm pretty sure it was Buck Rogers, but I'll have to look it up now.
I did on my website. I do an interview with Felix Sela, who is Tweaky the Robot.
Oh yeah,
he was also cousin it in the Addams Family, another comic book show. Yeah,
I used to have that action figure.
I used to have that action figure as a kid.
There was a large one in Europe, and then there was the small Mego.
I had the small Mego one when I was a little kid, and I put him with all my Star Wars guys.
I love those little Mego Star Wars, Battlestar was Mattel, but Buck Rogers and who's the other one I'm thinking? Black Hole.
Clash of the Titans.
No. The Mego ones were Black Hole and Buck Rogers because they bent like G.I. Joe's did before the 3¾ G.I. Joe's came out.
So who did Clash of the Titans? I had those figures as well.
If I had to guess, I'm going to guess Mattel, but I'm not 100% sure. Because they were more like the Star Wars guys. They didn't bend. They didn't have
because
the
elastic. Because I remember, like, I had Star Wars in the same, like, box of toys.
Oh, yeah.
I had Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica.
The Battlestar ones are definitely Mattel.
And then I had some Buck Rogers.
Yep.
And then I had... Clash of the Titans, and those were kind of the ones that I played with.
Yeah, I had the hero, the white robed guy. Who was it? Perseus?
Perseus.
Yeah, I had Perseus. I had Pegasus.
Oh.
I had who was the Satyr?
I didn't have him.
I had him.
Yeah. But yeah, I had almost all the Buck Rogers guys. Mm-hmm. I had all the Black Hole guys, which is just crazy because I'm looking at. We were at, Chris and I were at a toy show in Coburg, and I'm looking at the display, and the guy's got a Vincent, the little robot, the one that wasn't beat up, and it's $500.
It wasn't Vincent what was the name of the big red one?
The big red one was Maximilian.
Maximilian, thank you.
But yeah, there's I could get into the whole Mego thing about how that happened, but the whole bunch of the Mego figures were only released in Canada, not released anywhere else. Mm. So Bob, the guy who's beat up, like the beat-up robot, he's all bent and stuff, the old one, it goes for thousands.
A very similar thing happened with Sailor Moon toys, is that Sailor Moon, a lot of people don't know, Sailor Moon was more popular in Canada than it was in the United States during its original run. The reason is because it was voiced in Toronto, so because of CRTC laws, they had to put Sailor Moon on like 50,000 times a day.
Well, they didn't have to. But it was just an easy way to fill
their quota. Yeah. But they put it at key times. Like it was on before, at lunch, after school, before school. And kids just drew to it. So Canadian kids, it was a phenomenon in Canada. But it didn't really make it in the U.S. the same way. Not the way it did in Canada. So there was such a demand for Sailor Moon toys that there were certain Sailor Moon toys that were released in the States, but there was all there, you know, after those ones were made and didn't sell in the States, they were making more and just selling them in Canadian markets. And I have some of those, and they go for They're like, and that they're only what, about 20 years old, but they go like, I got some Sailor Moon dolls that are worth $700-$900 because they weren't released.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere, but and, like the only place you could get them was from Sears. Well, in Canada,
there's,
right?
There's a humanoid figure from the Black Hole, and it's just a junky little beige figure with a silver head, little Jawa cape and boots, and it's thousands. Yeah.
Wow.
But that's because, you know, up here they got cleared out by Sears for $1 apiece.
Right.
Meanwhile, nobody saw them in America. Black Hole was big in Italy. Nobody saw them in Italy. Nobody saw them, you know, elsewhere. So, anyways.
What else weird to me is I never really, I probably knew about Mego, the bigger, but I had all these toys, and I never knew that they were Mego.
Yeah, yeah. Micronauts, Buck Rogers, and they also did a Dukes of Hazzard set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they do a Chips one?
They did Chips, yeah, in 3¾. Yeah. There's also...
Love Boat. They did the Love Boat ones.
They did the Love Boat ones, but they were solid plastic.
Yeah.
So that was more the old style.
There was a proposed Dallas set that they never did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of them. It's because, you know, Star Wars hit, and as soon as Star Wars hit, the 8-inch figures went first it was 12-inch G.I. Joes, and then Mego came out with the 8-inch superheroes, and that destroyed the 12-inch market. So even G.I. Joe went to Super Joe, who was 8 inches. Big Jim was 9, so that seemed to be the size, because they could make a play set for less, right?
Right.
And then Kenner comes in with the 3¾. Can you imagine the Millennium Falcon for a 12-inch doll? I mean, it would have been massive, and it would have cost $1 million. There's no way they could have sold it. Yeah. So as soon as they went 3¾, everybody else was like switched to 3¾. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's sort of what...
I still see that happen to go. I remember in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's when I got into doing 12-inches. Yeah. And the 12-inchers. And I have different sizes now, but the 12-inch figures are my favorite size to collect. Yeah. And they don't make 12-inches like they were. Like there was a point maybe about 15, 20 years ago where they were making 12-inch everything. And now... Yeah.
Well, what they've done is now the 12-inch is more collector-in. Right, hot toys with their $225 Iron Mans, and, you know, $300 Black Widows.
So maybe that's the problem, is that I'm just not buying them because I can't afford them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they switched that marketplace. But I mean, they've tried. There was an Action Man doll figure made for a little while there in the early 2000s. There was Max Steel and stuff. So they tried. Like, my kids are girls, and they have Barbie dolls and stuff. So every often, somebody would buy them a man figure to go with their girl dolls, just so that, you know, Barbie could go on a date, because Ken was, man, Ken. G.I. Joe needed to come in and fix that up.
I just hope one of these days my parents just happen to find all my toys somewhere. But I know they gave some of them away to my cousin, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they gave all of them or not.
But I know for a fact that I had, you know, the Jawa with the vinyl cape. But just like everybody else's Jawa with the vinyl cape, we broke it. You know, the cape broke. That's why they replaced the cape and cloth. You know, went with the cloth. They also, because the figure was so small, like somebody at Kenner figured that they weren't getting value because you're paying the same price for, like, Darth Vader. Right. Jawa was half the size, so they made him a little bit fancier, thinking that would, you know, appease people. And, just some of the rare stuff that I had that I know I just destroyed. Even some of the knockoff figures. Like, I was at Value Village, and I was just going through the bag, and there's this little robot, and it just tweaked my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had that guy as a kid. So, you know, I bought it for $299. I'm looking, it's a $70 Kidco metal robot that was like a C-3PO knockoff thing. And it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, even the
I always think of though, it's funny when you talked about the value, like that you're paying so much for. And wrong thing, there's a little bit of change of topic, but you'll see where I'm going with it once I get into it.
Are we really? Because we usually don't.
You will. You will.
Because usually there isn't.
All right. So I've been collecting the Game of Thrones figures from
Patrick Duffy.
Right.
Was Patrick Duffy in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, he showed up in the shower.
Okay. Good.
Anyway. It was a red wedding, all a dream.
There you go.
Right. Anyway, I've been collecting the Game of Thrones figures by Dark Horse, and I've sort of stopped collecting them. I used to buy all of them, and I'm only buying key figures now, because from when I started buying them, they were about $25 a pop, but now they're about $40 each. And
that's the exchange rate.
I understand that, but the thing is, I remember when I was buying $25, I was buying like Jon Snow for $25 and Daenerys for $25 and Tyrion for $25, but now I'm paying $40 for characters, and I'm not really sure what their names are.
Yeah. Third soldier on the right.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. For $40. Yeah. And my point is now I'm paying more money for characters I don't even know. So I've kind of had to cut back. Basically, my thing is now, if I don't deem the character to be important to the series, I won't buy them. I'm still waiting for the Sam figure, Jon Snow's buddy Sam. They haven't made him yet. So that's the one I'm kind of waiting for. But otherwise, I'm not buying them anymore. They're just too expensive.
Well, to drift back to comics a little bit, same with those Star Wars action figure variants, right? They're just, they're cool, but then they started making the Darth Vader ones with these characters that, who the heck is that guy?
Oh, they really started. Now, if you were into the Darth Vader comic, it made sense.
Yeah.
But if, like, the whole reason for those Star Wars action figure variants was to hit the nostalgia nerve.
Yeah.
And if you're doing an action figure variant of a character that was introduced 3 issues ago, where's the nostalgia?
Yeah.
There is none.
I even passed on the Anakin, the boy, little boy version of Anakin. I didn't get that one either.
Why would anybody want that?
I don't know.
Nobody
I just
likes,
stick with the main
nobody,
Star Wars
Nobody
series.
Likes Jake Lloyd.
Oh, come on. Poor guy.
Well, I don't even know who Jake Lloyd is. He was never in any movie I've ever seen.
No, I think he's. I don't think he's an actor anymore.
He's not in any movies. He's not in any Star Wars movies, not that I know of.
Should we talk about comics?
Yeah. Yes.
Did you want to go with your Amazon purchase there, Martin?
Sure.
Or did you want to talk on your phone?
No, I'm not talking my phone. I'm doing tech support for Tony because he bought a new computer off me in the parking lot.
Oh.
So the other thing I got from
this looks like such a
from
cool
Amazon,
book.
And this was really cool because my editor in chief at First Comics News, where I do comic reviews, contributed heavily to this book, Rick Offenberger. This is the MLJ Companion. It's I should know. I think it was like 286 pages. Of nothing but the Archie superheroes. So a lot of people don't remember the Archie superheroes, but we're talking the Shield, the Jaguar,
the Web, the Black Hood.
Now, these characters have been
the
relaunched.
Comet.
Yeah, the Comet. These characters have been relaunched a couple of times. DC held the license for a little while, so they released two different lineups.
They did them as Impact.
Impact was one, and then they did another one that was, I can't remember what they called it, Red Circle, or they tried to integrate them. Remember when they tried to integrate Doc Strange and stuff into the regular DC realm?
Doctor Strange?
No, not Doctor Strange. Yeah, Doc Savage.
Doc Savage. Doc Savage wasn't at MLJ.
No, but they tried to bring him into that.
Yeah,
pulpy
what was
noir
that
thing?
Called? I remember that. And the Spirit.
The Spirit and stuff like
yeah,
this.
So, I don't remember what
that
so
was DC's
called.
Experimented with trying to bring these characters back, and I know that right now Archie is publishing a lineup. Who's they got? They call it Dark Circle Comics.
Yeah.
And they got the Black Hood,
the Black Hood.
Yeah. Hangman. Yeah. The problem is, like, I read a couple of those newer books, but they just didn't publish them on a regular basis. It was like, here's an issue. 3 months later, here's an issue. It's like, well, I mean, we could go on and on about Archie with that, right? But here's the Chilling Tales of Sabrina issue 1. 4 months later, here's number 2. 9 months later, here's issue 3. A year and a half later, here's number 4. We promised to have more coming out on a regular basis. Look, here's 5. Look, oh, we're back on time. No 6.
Yeah.
No 6.
Like Afterlife.
You know? So it's really cool book. And basically, it's all just a collection of articles that have been published elsewhere and some special stuff just for the book and full color pages and prints of the comics. And
that looks great.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
You know, though, I bought some collections of some of those MLJ books, and really they're not very good. That's the problem with those characters. They're cool characters, but the stories never delivered.
Can we be honest? Was there really any really really good book back then? Like if you go back and you pick up like an old Submariner and read it, or an old Blue Beetle, or an old Superman from the 50s, they're kind of
corny.
Well, they're meant for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's exactly their audience was, right?
But so those are even goofier and worse than usual.
So, yeah, but it looks like fun. So I'm going to read this up. I did a review of it because we got again, because of Rick, I got a screener copy of it, like a review copy. So I did a quick review on it. So now I'm actually going to be able to read it cover to cover.
Yeah, that looks like a great book.
And it's so much more fun, you know, being a tangible guy, having it big. Like, I got a pretty decent 10-inch tablet, but it's not the same as holding this book. It's so much nicer. Mm-hmm. Other than that... That's my comic news.
I got a great book to I read. I didn't read too much this week, but a couple weeks ago, I guess 2 weeks ago, the new Terry Moore book from Abstract Comics came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How'd that go?
It's called Motor Girl. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. I'm a huge Terry Moore fan. Strangers in Paradise, which is his classic series, is one of my top three titles of all time. And I was an avid Strangers in Paradise collector. And ever since then, anything Terry Moore touches, I buy. It just, now, I will admit that I've never liked, I one time described him as sort of the Dario Argento of comics, in that every time I see a Dario Argento name on a film, I'm like, oh my God, I love Suspiria. So I watch it, and then it's okay, but it's not as good as Suspiria. And that's always how I felt about Terry Moore's books. It's like, oh my God, Terry Moore, I gotta buy it. But it's never as good as Strangers in Paradise. But a little bit of history on Motor Girl. I still don't know what it's about. I read the first issue, which was super fun, but it didn't really tell you much. It just kind of introduced you to the characters, but didn't really give you any idea where the series was going to go. And it's basically about a woman, and she's sexy, and she works and lives in a junkyard, and she has a gorilla as her sidekick, and there's space aliens, and there's power tools. So that's what you need to
Perfect.
Know.
What more do you need?
That's right.
Yeah. What more do you need?
And it is so fun. It is just, and it's beautifully drawn, because Terry Moore is a wonderful artist.
Right.
And he's very famous for his female figures. And it's beautifully drawn, and it's super fun. And I think it's going to be a really fun book. Just, and they do set it up saying that there is going to be a big plot somewhere along the line, but they haven't really established that what that will be. But in the liner notes to the book, it was interesting, is that Motor Girl was originally intended.
Liner notes?
Yeah, he has back notes.
Okay.
Anyways, at the back of the book, he has notes.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, that's the record collector in me.
Yeah, exactly. The three of us knew exactly what you're talking about, but there's millennials out there going, what are liner notes?
Anyway.
No, actually, that's incorrect, because they're all into vinyl now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So they would know vinyl notes. Right.
Anyway. So
it's the cassette jockeys. They're like, what?
So anyways, he actually states in the book that Motor Girl was intended originally to be the follow-up series from Strangers in Paradise. But when he was preparing Motor Girl, that's when he got the idea for Echo, which was a science fiction title. So he did that first. And then he was going to do Motor Girl, and then got the idea for Rachel Rising, which was his last series. And Rachel Rising, it was good. It was good. It was much better than Echo. I never got into Echo. But it was good. It was solid. But after a while, it just seemed to drag. But this Motor Girl looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And if anybody sees Motor Girl, it's 350 Abstract Studios, Terry Moore, definitely pick it up. I'm just going to pick it up because it's Terry Moore. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad. But this, I think this is the first time I'm really excited about something he's done since Strangers in Paradise.
Well, didn't I see a couple weeks ago that he's doing another Strangers in Paradise 2018?
I saw a news article somewhere. Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to check that out.
I'm pretty sure.
I wish they do it. I think Strangers in Paradise would translate really well into a TV series, which, of course, then they would completely screw up.
I've never read
it would be nothing like the comic.
There you go.
Yeah. So, actually, you know what? They should not do Strangers in Paradise as a TV series, because I hate it. And then just
you hate all TV series that are based on comics.
Riverdale.
Now, one thing I did want to ask is Chris did me the favor of picking me up Mother Panic.
From DC's. Did you guys like it?
I didn't read it.
You didn't read it?
No, I was going to ask you about that.
I'm having a bit of a love-hate relationship with this DC Young Animal, because it's definitely written for a millennial type, short attention span. Give me flashy, and what's happening is the story is jumping around from page to page without sort of meanwhile or back at the farm. Or, I'm missing those little itty-bitty notes, and I'm 47, so the brain doesn't quite work as well as it used to. Maybe if I was 18, I wouldn't have any problems. So I'm having a little bit of difficulty catching the flow of the story sometimes. Same thing happened in Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye. One panel, he's got no facial hair. The next panel, he's got a scruff. The next panel, he's got a beard, and you can tell that it's obviously happening over a period of time, but the dialogue is almost like it's happening, this happened an hour ago. This is happening next day, and I was having trouble following it. So the same thing happened with Mother Panic, but I think you might like it.
Really?
Because it's set in Gotham. Mm-hmm. It's set in the Batman universe, and Batman even makes a little bit of a cameo in it, and it's just about a further character You know, I'd almost say Batwoman slash Batwing cross.
Okay.
But it is different enough. The art's a bit sketchy, stylistic-wise. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a choice that they're making in the Young Animal books. They're all very stylistic in terms of art. You're not going to see anybody who's, you know, aping Neil Adams or Arthur Adams, for that matter. So I thought it was pretty good. But that's the only comic I've read this week.
Yeah. I read... what did I read? I finally read Teen Titans Rebirth, even though it's a couple of month and a half old. But I have nothing to say about that.
No.
Not really.
Teen Titans?
Yeah. Teen Titans with the Damian?
I don't even acknowledge their existence.
I'm a few issues behind.
I haven't read... Well, there's only been one issue since then. Oh, I guess it? Number one. I haven't read number one. It's on my pull list, but I kind of read it kind of going, I wonder how long this is going to last on my pull list. Yeah. So we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. What did you read, Chris? Or what have you got interesting?
Well, I've got two piles of books at home I haven't read yet, but anyways.
Because you were supposed to do nothing but reading today.
I did, actually. I read a Brian Michael Bendis book.
What?
Yes.
Which one?
I tried to pretend that it wasn't him writing and I just read it because I wanted to meet Riri.
Oh, yeah, Iron Man. How'd that go?
How'd that go?
It was good. It was kind of a back origin.
Yeah, yeah.
And current her. Yeah, I liked it. I haven't read anything with her in it. I tried to ignore Bendis at all together.
Yeah, explain to me, how is she the new Iron Man? What happens to Tony Stark?
See, I don't even know. I know he's gone.
I think something's supposed to happen to him in Civil War, but because Civil War is a bit behind.
Delayed, yeah.
It's another Mr. Fantastic situation where... The monthly titles are carrying on and
you know,
we don't know.
See, the book picks up where, you know, quote unquote, Tony's gone and she's trying to be an Iron Man person type character. And it kind of flips back and forth between now and her childhood and her, you know, her teacher, principal, whatever, acknowledging that she's a super genius and she needs a certain kind of attention and stuff like that. And I liked it. It was good. Yeah. I enjoyed reading it.
Now, there's some kind of a... that book has completely slipped by me because, again, I haven't even looked in a Marvel's preview in months.
Yeah.
So I missed that. I did want to pick that up to take a look at it. But I understand there's some kind of a controversy over this U.S. Avengers, and they've got like 52 variants or something, one for every state.
Oh, didn't they, like the Justice League?
Yeah,
like
the Justice League did, and then
there's
some kind of a nonsensical thing that the background is blue on a couple of the ones that voted Trump, and some of them the back. Like, it's just I think somebody was finding something that wasn't really there.
Yeah,
well, it's a coincidence.
That reminds me, you know, we shouldn't get too political because I know by knowing everybody in this room that we're not all on the same sides politically. We can barely agree on comics half the time. Yeah, so but somehow we maintain our friendship despite all of this. But I think it was interesting. I was thinking about this after this week's events, and I don't want to talk too much about it. I feel the more we talk about what happened in America this week, the more we get dragged down in anxiety and angst that we really don't need to get into. But I was thinking to myself about the series, and it's a couple months old, Citizen Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to now go. I want to go reread Citizen Jack. Because now,
especially now that you can read it all at once.
And now it just makes what happened. It is even, it's so interesting because the book, for those who don't remember, Citizen Jack was an Image book that came out, I guess, during the early part of the campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
But it finished months ago. And it's about this this horrible, sexist, misogynistic, bumbling boob of an idiot who should never be president, who sells his soul to Satan. And no matter what he does, stupid, no matter what terrible, moronic, awful thing he does, it shoots him up in the polls and he eventually becomes president. And it's so... I think it's an interesting book now because it's exactly what happened. This book ended months ago. Yeah. And it's... What's that word? Come on, help me with
Patrick Duffy.
Right. And exactly, Patrick Duffy. So it's just an interesting.
Nana Mouskouri.
I think it's probably more interesting now.
Andy Williams.
Right.
It's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, a little.
It's annoying.
Yeah, but I can deal with it.
Okay.
Did you notice? I just whoop! It just goes right by me. Because, anyways, But I was thinking, wasn't there a plot in Superman at one point where Lex Luthor was president of the United States?
Yep, he was.
He was, wasn't? And yeah. Pete Ross was best man, not best man,
Vice president.
Vice president, right?
Yeah. Pete Ross. How, was
how did
president.
That? Did you guys ever read any of?
No,
those?
I wasn't reading Superman at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And this is the other thing. So then I was thinking about that, but then I was thinking even further. Pete Ross. Let's dismantle this character, Pete Ross.
Which one?
Well. Pete
Smallville
Ross.
Smallville Pete Ross.
Well, in Smallville, Pete Ross was always kind of like the nice kid that knew Superman's secret identity. Yeah. But somewhere along the line, DC turned him into like a huge dick. When did that happen?
I don't know because he's not in current continuity at all. He hasn't been in
but,
there
but
since...
I mean, but somewhere in like the 80s and 90s, yeah. they turned Pete Ross into like this absolute blowhard.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't know. I don't know where that kind of began, where Pete Ross became antagonistic.
Yeah, I'm like I said, yeah. I missed Superman in that particular era. Mm. I mean, I read the original John Byrne. Well, the original. I read the John Byrne kind of relaunch after that Man of Steel miniseries that he did.
Yeah.
So I read that for quite a few years. But then I haven't touched Superman realistically until New 52 and Rebirth.
But my main memories of Pete Ross is from the old Superman books from the 60s and 70s.
I don't remember Pete Ross at all from those books.
Oh, yeah, he was in those.
Yes. I remember the mermaid more than Pete Ross. I know he was in them.
Yeah.
I know the character.
He was
but I don't have any specific...
Yeah, he was this blonde kid, and what his shtick was is he knew Clark Kent. Superman.
He was Jughead.
Well, he knew Superman and Clark Kent were the same. Were you know?
Yeah.
But
he was Clark Kent's Jughead, and
right?
Clark
but
Archie.
Clark Kent did not know that Pete Ross knew.
Yeah.
So Pete Ross would Clark Kent would be you know Superman would have like a piece of green kryptonite there, and Pete Ross would come walking down the street, and goes, "Oh look, it's Superboy with kryptonite. Better get rid of that." Ho ho ho, and he. And then he'd run off, and Superboy would go, "Oh man, what happened? Oh, I wonder how I got saved." And it was like kind of like Pete Ross was kind of would kind of like save Superboy's hide every or Clark Kent or help. Yeah. You know, Lana Lang would be really close to figuring out, you know, that Clark and Superboy were the same, and Pete Ross would do something to make sure she didn't find out. And yeah,
see, when I watched Smallville, I never made any connection to any character. And although if I went back now. I'd probably make the connection. I'd recognize the character, but I never made a connection when Smallville was on.
Now, Pete Ross and Lana Lang were married for a while in the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in Smallville, the characters weren't anything
No. Smallville. Although, I will say, the first couple of seasons of Smallville, I really liked it.
I will have to say that...
I loved the first few seasons.
Erica Durance's portrayal of Lois Lane in Smallville was pretty fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah, he
was
good.
Amazing as Lex Luthor. And I like Tom Welling as Clark Kent. Yeah.
No,
good. I remember when it came on being my poo-poo, oh my God, this is going to suck. It's Superman 90210. And then actually watching it and going, holy man, this was good. And the first few seasons were the executive producer with Jeff Loeb.
Yeah.
And when Jeff Loeb was overdoing the series... It was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen to me. This is me saying it was incredible.
They lost their way a little bit when they started with the little pseudo Justice League.
Well, that's you know where it was is when they brought in Green Arrow.
Yeah, exactly.
And suddenly it became the Green Arrow show, co-starring Superman.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even our Green Arrow. And then it just got it. By the time they were bringing in characters like I know there was a Zatanna series episode I never even saw.
I heard rumor that the reason why they brought in Green Arrow is because it was like contract time to talk to. Tom Welling about renewing his contract, so they were like, "Let's get another character in here." So if all else fails, we'll just rename the show and keep going.
And one thing I do know is Tom Welling is, you guys have probably heard, he's famous for not being the easiest guy to deal with. He's apparently what's he doing now?
Yeah,
not much, is because he's not.
Well, he directed a bunch of episodes of Smallville, so I'd be surprised if he doesn't move on to that.
I've heard some horror stories about
him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I've heard some real horror stories about the guy. So, but he was great as I liked him as Superman or as Clark Kent, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. He was really great. Some of the episodes with the chemistry between him and Michael Rosenbaum was just amazing.
It was fun.
It was a fun series. First few seasons excellent. But it lost its way. I think where it really jumped the shark was when they brought the Wonder Twins in.
I missed that.
I didn't see that one either, but I know what happened.
I got all excited.
The girl had on the back of her phone, she had one of those sparkly things that was Gleek.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
No, there you go.
Okay, that's kind of
fun. It
was
just like an homage, right? They just kind of flashed.
And then they had the Black Canary, but she had like a raccoon mask. She would like, she painted like this raccoon mask. What? Why didn't...
With the short hair.
She wasn't the Black Canary. She was Raccoon Girl.
I liked when they did that Legion of Superheroes episode.
I didn't see that.
That
one.
Was pretty good.
Stargirl was in that.
Yeah.
And Dr. Fate.
No.
And Hawkman.
Yeah.
Hawkman, yeah. No,
the Legion of Superheroes, not Society.
Oh, they did the Society, too.
Yeah, but they did the Legion one as
well. Oh, I don't know. Okay. I didn't see that one.
Keep Patrick Duffy.
Right. Patrick Duffy wasn't in that.
No,
John
I know.
John Schneider was.
There you go.
Dad, have you guys ever heard the story about when I met John Schneider?
Yes, we did.
Yep. What happened?
Sam's we're going to move on because Chris has got a whole sleeve of paper of stuff here.
He's
just been sitting in the corner not talking.
What the hell's up with that? Chris is back.
We're going to let him talk. No, honestly, we're going to let him talk eventually. Soon. Shut up, Sam, so he can talk.
I seem to be giving Marvel more of a chance these days.
Good for you.
I'm really liking Champions.
Yeah, I read the first one.
I only read
the
first one. Is there a second one out yet?
Number two is out, this week, and I read that.
It's going to get canceled, though.
Probably.
Because the artist, Humberto Romero,
he's anti-American.
He just did this thing on the internet that said that he's not going to go to any of the states that voted Trump because he's a Mexican.
Yeah.
And he was offended by everything, and he's scared for his safety and stuff. So he's just not going to do any comic conventions. He said, please respect that. I'm happy to meet you guys in any of the other states. And the onslaught of negativity that hit him, you know, it's like, well, you know, if I came to Mexico and tried to get a job, and it was just brutal. And everyone's like going, well, it's a good thing I don't have to buy this comic anymore.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
But it's too bad because it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a huge spoiler, but the second issue is them just getting to know each other and their different powers and stuff. It's just fun. Yeah. Right? Like, it's not serious. It's just having fun.
The first issue was fun. I enjoyed the first issue a lot. Yeah.
I read the new Thor book.
Oh, yeah?
What's it called? Unworthy Thor?
Unworthy Thor?
It was good, too. It's the... I'm just trying to... Like the, I guess I don't know if this is spoilers or not, but the overall premise is that he's trying to find the hammer from the Ultimates universe, which apparently is somewhere.
Huh. And
he's been told
this. Forgetting the Ultimates universe kind of merged in.
So he's been told there's another hammer. You should go find it. But he's riding around on this ram. I want to call it a sheep.
Yeah, he used to do that with the Walter Simonson issues.
He can't fly anymore because he doesn't have the hammer. So he's riding around on this flying sheep, which also helps him fight in battles.
Ram.
Goat. That's a better one, yeah. So it was fun. It's interesting to see.
No, that's Jason Aaron, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like Jason Aaron.
He's the guy that kind of rebooted Thor sort of for me anyways. Yeah. And I liked his stuff. It was really good. Like if I was still getting some Marvel books, Thor would probably be one of them.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Have you caught up with Civil War?
I am not
you
reading
didn't do
Civil War.
At all, okay, so I think I'm still the only one. Dan, I know, said he was going to read it, but we'll have to see about that.
How can you read a comic when it's sealed in plastic?
He's not even here to defend himself.
That's right. What else you got there?
So back in the summer, I picked up some books. There was a guy in town that posted up on Kijiji that he had all these books, but he had three books by Darwin Cook called Parker.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah. So I don't even call them, they're hardback. They're two thick books, and I guess there's a thinner, larger book that kind of like a prequel to the second book. I've only read the first one.
Yeah.
I think it's called Parker the Hunter, based on novels by Richard Park, I believe his name is. But I'm reading through the first one, and it's great. Like, it's noir, and it's black and white, Darwin Cook sketch. Right. And I'm reading the story going, this is familiar. So I guess these book series by Richard Park is the movie that Mel Gibson did, Payback.
Oh, yeah. Right on.
Right. So that's, I'm going, oh, okay. Because I looked it up. This is this. Anyway, so it expands on that. You know, the main character. Robbery, betrayed by the wife, the girlfriend.
Did you see me just sit up in my seat? It was like, what? What? Wait a sec. Yeah. I like that movie.
Yeah, so it was good. So I finished the first one. It was really good. Now I got it. I don't know what it must be like a prequel or something, and then there's a second really thick book, too.
Hmm. Right, Darwin Cook's amazing.
Yeah, the artwork is great. Yeah.
Did he write it, too?
Yeah, I believe he gets the writing and the art credit for it. So
he's a hell of a writer, too.
Oh,
he doesn't always get he gets... He always gets so much fame for his art, but people forget, like, he wrote New Frontier, which was
brilliant. Did the whole thing,
Yeah.
And I also read the new Batman Turtles Adventure book. So it's based on the cartoons as opposed to the...
Oh, yeah.
It was fun, too.
Was it fun, yeah?
Yeah. And so because they're based on the cartoons, you can almost hear the voices, right? Like, you can hear What's-His-Face doing Batman.
Kevin Conroy.
Like, you can just kind of hear it. And then, you know, you get to, sorry, you get to the Joker and Harley, and you just kind of hear, you know, Mark Hamill and the girl that did the squeaky
was
Harley
Amanda,
voice.
What was her name?
Oh, I should know it too, but I can't.
Yeah, I can think. It's Amanda something.
Yeah. But it was fun too. I mean, it's really cartoonish because it's based on the cartoons.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's good.
Yeah, because they just wound up that Batman Teen Turtles.
Which was great. I thought that was a great crossover.
That was a
too.
Good crossover. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yep.
Anything else? Anybody?
Well, apparently.
We've got 3.5 minutes.
All right. So I read the article today, Frank Cho is in negotiations to take over Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I had to stop and kind of reread it, right? Like
a genderless Wonder Woman.
Yeah, did he not get kicked off of that? But apparently,
Wonder Person.
He's taking over maybe after what's his name, Greg Rucka finishes, who apparently is the guy that caused the scuffle and caused him to leave the doing the covers. I don't know. I was just like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
I met Frank Cho years ago when he was doing Liberty Meadows and Liberty Squared, and he's a great guy, and he's a hell of a great artist.
Yeah.
And I wish people would just shut up and let him draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I found this funny. So apparently, Marvel got back to being the number one seller for October over DC. But there was one book that was in front of it, apparently, was The Big Trouble in Little China / Escape from New York crossover.
Oh, I didn't really
know, by Boom Studios.
I haven't seen any of the sales charts, but I'll have to look. I know that Boom was doing Big Trouble in Little China. I think I got the first 4 issues, and it just didn't do it for me.
Well, apparently that was the number one seller for October, according to this.
Could be.
Huh.
But that's kind of funny having a crossover with the same, well, not the same character, but the same actor,
that's
right?
That's weird.
Yeah. And it's very strange.
Fun. That'd be like that one time that Travis Morgan from Warlord met Oliver Queen in Seattle. They actually did. That was that Hannigan series, yep. Mike Grell. Anyways, I think that's it for today.
I think that's it.
So we'll probably see you guys next week. And
I'll be here next week.
We'll actually buy some comics. And
that sounds good.
Have something to read about. All right, guys. Enjoy.
Yep.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like The Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
Check for Eugene Levy CFFF promo take 3.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy, really do.
You do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.